Welcome back, everybody. We're diving into some seriously juicy biblical drama today.
Oh yeah, this one's a doozy.
We're tackling 2 Samuel, chapters 1 through 3.
David's rise to power.
Full of plot twists.
Political maneuvering.
And let's just say maybe a little bit of, well, spin doctoring.
We've got this amazing lecture we're working with today. It's by a real biblical scholar. I think you're going to find this stuff really fascinating.
Yeah. Like, so we start off with this Amalekite character. He shows up.
Out of the blue.
Claims he killed King Saul.
Mm-hmm.
But here's the thing. It doesn't really line up with what we read in 1 Samuel, right?
No, not at all.
There are some discrepancies.
Some big ones.
And it's almost like he's trying too hard. Like, he brings Saul's crown and armband to David. Almost like a...
like a prize.
Yeah, like some kind of, you know, weird gift.
It makes you wonder, doesn't it? Was this guy actually even there, or was he just trying to get on David's good side?
Exactly. And I'm like, hey, new king, look what I did for you.
Pretty clever, if you ask me.
But then, how does David react to this news? I mean, you'd think he'd be relieved, right? Saul was his enemy.
Well, not exactly. David goes into full-on mourning mode, tearing his clothes, fasting, the whole 9 yards.
Wow.
He even writes this incredible lament for Saul and Jonathan. It's really powerful stuff.
So he calls Saul the Lord's anointed. I mean, that's pretty respectful considering Saul was trying to, you know, kill him.
Right. So what do we make of that? Genuine grief or a smart political move?
Ooh, good question. Is he trying to win over Saul's supporters?
Maybe even deflecting suspicion. Like, see, I'm totally heartbroken. I had nothing to do with this.
It's all so ambiguous.
And that's what makes David such a fascinating character. We're left wondering about his true motivations.
So we've got David dealing with this grief, but also the kingdom is totally divided. Judah makes him king, but the northern tribes, they're backing Saul's son, Ishbosheth.
Yeah, real messy situation.
It's not exactly a peaceful transfer of power, huh?
Not at all. Shows you just how volatile things were back then. And then there's the fact that Ishbosheth sets up his rule in Transjordan. That's a big clue.
Okay, what's the clue telling us?
It means the Philistines were still a major threat. They were still in control of big parts of Israel.
So David's not exactly stepping into a stable situation.
No, he's got his work cut out for him, that's for sure.
And then, boom, we get this first big clash near the Pool of Gibeon. It's almost ridiculous when you read it.
It is, right. You have these two groups facing off, and Abner, Saul's old general, suggests this team combat thing.
What, like a duel?
Well, more like 12 men on each side, all stabbing each other at the same time.
Oh, my God.
It's a pretty brutal image. And it just shows how pointless this whole conflict really is.
Yeah, no winners there.
And then we've got Joab, David's nephew.
Oh, yeah, Joab. Intense guy.
That's an understatement. He goes after Abner's younger brother, Asahel. This crazy chase. And, well, ends badly for Asahel.
Ends with a spear, doesn't it?
It does. And there's actually some debate about how it all went down. Some translations suggest it might not have been as straightforward as it seems.
Interesting. But regardless, Joab's out for revenge now.
Oh, big time. This is going to come back to haunt everyone later on.
And then, just to throw another wrench in the works, we suddenly get this, like, harem report. David's got 6 wives now.
Yeah, that's an interesting detail, isn't it?
Seems a little random. Why include that?
Well, remember, the Deuteronomic law wasn't exactly a fan of kings having multiple wives. It was seen as a recipe for trouble.
Oh, right. Corruption and all that.
Exactly. So it makes you wonder if David's starting to, you know, slip a little.
Succumbing to the temptations of power.
Maybe.
Yeah.
It definitely adds another layer to his character, doesn't it?
For sure. And then there's the whole Michal situation. David wants his former wife back, Saul's daughter. Seems fair enough, I guess.
Sure. On the surface.
Right.
But it's also a pretty smart political move.
How so?
By bringing Michal back, he's strengthening his connection to Saul's family. Makes his claim to the throne even stronger.
Ah, I see. But what about Michal's current husband, Paltiel? He's left devastated.
Yeah, the text really emphasizes his grief. He's weeping as she's taken away.
It's kind of heartbreaking.
It is. And the way the story's told, you almost feel like the narrator is siding with Paltiel a bit, questioning David's actions, you know?
So it's not so clear-cut. We're seeing a more complex side to David here.
Absolutely. He's not just the good guy anymore. He's making some tough choices.
Choices with consequences.
And that's just the beginning. Things are going to get even more complicated from here.
Man, talk about a power vacuum. Right. We left off with David in mourning, but now Ishbosheth, Saul's son,
he doesn't last long, does he?
Nope. Chapter 4, things take a dark turn.
2 of his own captains, Baana and Rechab.
His own guys.
Yeah. They decide to take matters into their own hands. Picture this.
Yeah.
It's midday, scorching hot. Everyone's napping.
Yeah.
Right? And these two, they sneak into Ishbosheth's house.
Like a couple of shady spies.
Exactly. And the text calls them worthless men. Not just because of what they do, but like who they are.
Mm.
Opportunistic thugs.
So they, what, they kill him in his sleep?
They assassinate him, yeah. And they chop off his head.
Awesome.
And they hightail it over to Hebron. Yeah. Figure they'll be heroes, you know. Bring David the head as a trophy.
Talk about misjudging the situation.
Big time. David's horrified. He sees right through them.
He knows it's not some act of loyalty.
No, it's just a power grab. Pure and simple.
So what does he do?
Orders their execution.
Immediately.
Wow. Strong statement.
Right. He could have easily used this to his advantage. You know, like, oh, those terrible men. Good riddance.
But he doesn't. He actually mourns Ishbosheth.
He does. Gives him a proper burial. Even curses the land where it happened.
That's intense. He's setting precedent here, huh?
Oh, yeah. He's saying, this is how we do things in my kingdom. No more lawlessness. So, okay, rival gone. Path to the throne is clear now, right?
You'd think so, wouldn't you? And the northern tribes, they finally come around. They go to Hebron, anoint David as king over all Israel.
United at last. Happy ending, right?
Well, it is a huge victory, sure. But there's still that, you know, that lingering shadow.
Oh, yeah. Joab. Can't forget about him.
Exactly. What he did, that whole revenge thing with Abner, reminds us that David's power, it's not absolute.
Like there are forces he can't fully control.
Powerful people with their own agendas. Loyalty can be a tricky thing.
Okay, so David's king. What's next?
He sets his sights on Jerusalem.
Jerusalem? Wait, why Jerusalem?
Well, it's strategically important.
And symbolically, too.
For our listeners who might not be, you know, Bible scholars, remind us, why was Jerusalem so significant?
Well, back then, it wasn't part of any Israelite tribe. It was a Jebusite city neutral territory.
Ah, I see.
Perfect spot for a capital of a, you know, a brand new United Kingdom.
Makes sense. But conquering Jerusalem, that must have been tough. Oh, yeah. The Jebusites, they were known for being pretty hardcore. Their city was supposed to be impenetrable.
They actually taunted David, didn't they?
They did. Said even their blind and lame could defend it.
Seriously, what did David do?
He didn't back down, that's for sure. He rallies his troops, promises a reward for whoever takes the city.
I bet I know who volunteered for that job.
Who else? Joab.
Mm-hmm.
He leads the assault, takes the city. Another notch in his belt.
He's a good fighter. You got to give him that.
He is. But it's that ambition, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Makes you wonder about his loyalty.
Is he serving David or himself?
Hard to say. But that's what makes this whole period so interesting. All those layers of intrigue and ambition.
So Jerusalem becomes David's capital.
Yes. A city that will, you know, be tied to his legacy forever.
A new era.
It is. But with Joab in the picture, well, you just know there's going to be more drama coming.
I can't wait to find out. This is getting good. Okay, so David's sitting pretty in Jerusalem, new capital. Things are looking up, you know. But with these biblical stories, it's like you just know things can't stay calm for too long.
Yeah, peace and quiet doesn't really last long, does it?
Nope. So what happens next?
Well, as David gets settled, you can see how he's really shaping his rule. I mean, he's making alliances. He's building up his defenses. He's launching campaigns.
Expanding his territory.
Oh, yeah. Full-on king mode. But what's interesting is that David, he's not just copying what other kings were doing, you know?
Yeah, he's putting his own spin on things.
Exactly. He's got all that experience, his faith, and yeah, maybe a little bit of that flair for the dramatic that we've already seen.
Like that whole mourning thing with Saul.
Exactly. And a perfect example of this is his decision to bring the Ark of the Covenant to Jerusalem.
Oh, yeah. The Ark. That's a big one.
Yeah.
So for our listeners who aren't, you know, maybe haven't cracked open the Bible in a while, what is the Ark of the Covenant? Why is it such a big deal?
Well, think of it like this. It's the ultimate symbol of God being with the Israelites.
Yeah.
You know, like this sacred chest that holds the Ten Commandments.
Yeah, those are important.
And remember, it was captured by the Philistines back when Saul was king. So bringing it back, that's like a huge victory, you know, a sign that God's favor is back with Israel.
So David's not going to let this just, you know, pass by quietly.
No way. He goes all out. Music, dancing, sacrifices.
The whole shebang.
Yeah, it's like a, you know, a giant celebration.
Yeah.
Part parade, part religious festival.
So it's a good time.
It is. Until, well, things take a bit of a dark turn.
Oh, no. What happened?
Though they're carrying the Ark, right?
Mm-hmm.
And this guy, Uzzah, he reaches out to steady it. I mean, totally understandable.
Yeah, you wouldn't want it to fall.
Right. But He struck dead by God just like that.
Whoa, talk about a buzzkill.
Right. It's like a reminder, you know, the sacred, you got to treat it with respect.
So, I mean, was David just using this whole ark thing to boost his own image, or was it genuine?
It's hard to know for sure. That's what's so intriguing about David. You know, he's got that mix of piety and pragmatism.
He's a complicated dude.
That's for sure. And that's what makes him so human.
Yeah, he's not just a saint in a storybook. He's real.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But speaking of real, we got to remember Joab is still, you know, lurking in the background.
Yeah. Can't forget about Joab.
And this lecture, it doesn't shy away from the dark side of David's reign, you know.
What do you mean?
Well, think about Bathsheba and her husband, Uriah.
Oh, right. That's a rough story.
It is. David makes some really bad choices, you know, choices with consequences.
It shows that even the most powerful people, they're still human.
They make mistakes. They get tempted.
They mess up.
And it's in those moments, maybe even more than his victories, that we learn the most, you know.
Yeah.
Leadership, it's not about being perfect.
Yeah, it's about how you handle those mistakes.
Exactly. So as we wrap up our deep dive into David's rise, what should our listeners take away from all of this?
What have we learned?
Well, David, he reminds us that leadership, it's a journey. It's not about the destination. It's about all the steps along the way. Mm. You know, the ups and downs, the good and the bad.
Being strong, but also being humble.
Yeah. Having compassion and admitting when you're wrong. David, he's a powerful figure, but he's also flawed, just like all of us.
His story, it's a story for all time, you know. It still speaks to us today.
For sure. It reminds us that power, ambition, the human heart, those things, they don't change.
Well, that about wraps up our deep dive into David's rise to power. I hope you've all enjoyed the ride. What a story.
It's a wild one, full of intrigue and drama and lessons for us all.
And remember, folks, there's always more to learn, more to explore. So keep digging, keep questioning.
Keep that curiosity alive.
Thanks for joining us, everyone. Until next time.